Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cuff. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond.
What's up with it, John? Man, don't change that sound. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that sound. Wiggly.
Yeah, yeah, this is Cassidy, the hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw. And you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio. And I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
What it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West West, y'all.
My Tiger Kung Fu is better than yours. I don't think you're good enough to avenge your master.
Try it!
Admit it, am I not? Much better than you, better than you, better than you, better than you.
Deep in the night, long range, beat with the rice. Force price, hit trips off the roll of the dice. Barbaric bars, scar for life. Stick pins in your head, do dirt to your wife. I know that's not nice, been to overeat it with ice. Make your face think and pipe, speak to the mic. My chamber is 10, freedom or death. Savor your breath. Give me respect, rub and connect. Architect, bodies I wreck. Fuck is my check, brains get splattered. Come here dry, leave here wet. It doesn't matter, even a speck.
People make the world go round. People make the world go round.
We take the serious head. Make this crisp and clear. Chop, chop. What? I'm digging in the hood up to no good. Talking low down. Ish. Get drunk, lined up quick. It's the season of the tech. Give me a vision and yes, to be a Vic. Spit acid on track. Cause I want to electrify you. Just you call me Blanca.
Yo.
I don't need a war. Boost my ego. I need a ship. Know how to get this though. Anything lesser than that. I don't play that ish, off this thing yourself, do. Kick in the door, wave the force, I'm ugly. Gotta love me.
People make the world go round. People make the world go round.
First name Dungeon, last name Master. Middle name is I'll beat you out with L after. No, I'm not a rapper, all for the actors. See, I'm a retired crack slinger, still active gun clapper. The Ips and Benjamins and Soaps, what I'm after. I had to entertain myself, but it's on track for laughter. Must have left after, foreskin crafted. Houston, look, we have a problem, Dungeon, the X-Factor. The Mel Mackey is here, so don't front on my face. Somebody better give me bread, if not, you will get full of fix. Music is for pillaging, I saw rape and attacking. Put sperm in the belly, just the factor. It's the reactor.
People make the world go round.
We are now tuned in to episode 409 of the Live is the Most Direct Show, representing the streets, representing the backpackers and real hip-hop heads, off-the-cuff radio. I'm tuned in with my co-host T-Max with the facts.
What it do? It's another Sunday, beginning of the week, OTCF in the building. We are live and direct. Shout out to our co-host, the Spirit of Lotta, Sandman, Ladies and Chill. We are sponsored by Core Financial, Jesse's Boutique, Buddy Boy Entertainment, King Era Productions, Da Vinci Clothing,
Blue Ball Radio,
and Dirty Basement Radio.
We got a lot of spots.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Tonight is a live show tonight, man, because this guy here, a contributor to the Wu-Tang sound, pivotal to that movement, and he has a lot going on for 2021, straight up mastermind behind the boards, and he's here with us right now, here to join the archives of 409. So let's all welcome the Dungeon Master, y'all.
Yep.
Peace.
Peace, God.
What's good, my brother?
Glad to have you with us.
Man, it's an honor, man. Thanks for having me, Lord. Right now it's just downtime, but now I mean taking a little rest right now off this tour that me and Drew the Priest is on. You know what I mean?
Definitely, man. God body represent, man. It's always great, you know, to have the legends amongst us, man. We're just as honored, you know, and humbled as well, man. So you get the downtime, so we get the lowdown in terms of the whole history, in terms of how you started and everything, man. So, I mean, I guess we can get right to it. I mean, so tell us a little bit about, you know, your beginnings in hip-hop, what made you fall in love with it, and ultimately, you know, how you became, you know, aligned with that, you know, the niggas that... A lot of people don't know for that Wu, you know, said we usually take all the garments or witty, unpredictable, talented natural
facts,
game.
Facts.
Tell us about it, man. The 36.
Well, basically, for a lot of people that do know me from, like, back then and everything else, you know what I mean? I was part of the Black Watch movement, which was X-Clan and everything, you know what I mean? Paradise and all that, Boubacar and during that time, we was just, you know what I'm saying, doing shows. We played cats with, like, Positive K, Light in them, you know, at the festivals and all that. Music always been, like a part of my life anyway, because, you know, my family was into it deeply. They was doing the gospel thing and everything, so, you know, picked up from that. And then, man, it just happened to be hip-hop now, so we just made it, you know what I mean? It's more like when I was little and everything, I used to, you know, we used to be, like, on the stoop and all that, you know, beatboxing, slapping, you know what I mean, slapping the cement and all that other stuff while playing Skelly, you know what I mean? And then we would just come up with, like, little things to do and all that. We used to dance, I mean, put it away, like that era back then, it can never be replaced. You know what I'm saying?
You came up and we talk about the Black Watch movie. That's the golden era. You know, that's the first golden era, man. So I'm like you, yeah. So you part of history with all of that.
This when Kane, Rakim first came out. Talking about Juice Crew. It's Monkey, R.I.P., you know what I mean? Coogee, all that, you know what I mean? So it was, like, real crazy back then. But, like, you know, it was unity back then, mm-hmm. you know? And then, you know, as kids and everything, we fall prone to, like, certain things that took us and distracted us, you know, from our calling, which was the streets and everything. But, you know... As time goes on, I know I learned to DJ. I started out, you know, spitting and everything else. But, like, my main thing back then was just DJing and producing. And then I figured, like, around 86, 87, that's when I started, you know, just started rhyming. And we would just go to, like, different areas in New York City. We just go battle people or we just go... And just perform just for the fuck of it, you know?
Yes, man. Now tell us, what was that era like? Because you figure Hip hop in earnest really started around 84. You know, Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, you know, with the message. Of course, LL would, you know, be on Def Jam in 85, a year later, of course, the Run DMC Profile Records. So you, you know, so you're still like a couple years into it during that time when this is like in its nascent stages. And, you know, did you all
know? This the killer beat, though. Hip hop really originated in 1973.
Going back, taking it back, the last poets and all of that. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, so.
You know, Sugar Hill Gang, all that. Yeah.
You know, so, man, them days. One thing I can say about those days, I could always cherish those days because, like, back then, the block party was a block party.
Right.
You know what I mean? Wasn't nobody, I mean, you get your little fights here and there, but it's nothing. Cats was fighting back then. Get your drink on afterwards. Everybody goes home alive, and everything, it is what it is now. It's just like real crazy, and I mean it is. I mean it do what it do, but you know that golden era was something, man. You know what I mean? Back then, cats used to carry crates of records and build speaker pyramids on the block just so they could mash out.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Now everything is digital. It is what it is, though.
Yeah.
How you been adapted to the digital age?
Well, I've always been like a little geek in heart. You know, I like computers and stuff, so it wasn't hard for me at all. You know what I mean? It's more like, okay, so this is what they're doing now. So I went to school for it, like anybody with a brain supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I went to school for it. I learned different I learned different equipment and everything, and I started doing what I do. Oh, I was started making my tracks, and we just make it go hard, you know. And then I went to Atlantic City for a little bit, started my own little group, just like pre-Wu-Tang, and we did what we did out there, put out a couple of mixtapes and everything. Name of the group was LTZ. And we was like 12, 13 deep at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, due to certain circumstances, I had to get back to New York. Then when I got back to New York, you know, I got with Dirty. And Dirty, you know what I mean, took me under the wing. And then everything else just went from there. You know, I'm in Papa Wu's studio. I'm actually learning to engineer and everything, learning to perfect my craft.
Mm-hmm.
And all that. Then when Dirty went to jail, Papa Wu took me under the wing. And then I started producing more and everything, learning the ins and outs of the business and everything, like as far as like publishing, you know, filling out all this paperwork and everything. And then from there, you know, just made it do what it do.
Definitely, man. We got to definitely give a heavenly shout out, of course, to Papa Wu, you know, with ODB.
Definitely that.
A song, you know, I mean, you know, now.
Yes, sir.
What's wild, DM, is like when you're looking at that era, because, of course, you know, DJ Kool Herc, you know, the pioneer of the two turntables, you know, he's the one that pioneered, you know, how, you know, the mixing would eventually, you know, were brought and would evolve into what it is today. So, like you said, we went to school for it. So
right,
you were on,
during my time in Brooklyn, to me, the DJs that I was looking up to during that time was DJ Scratch and DJ Peter Parker.
Mm.
Every year, them two would give a show. For the community, and they just do what they do. And then, you know, because I actually was signed to Peter Parker. We had a deal with on Polygram Records at one time when it was in Brooklyn. But then I had to fall back from it. Something was just telling me not to whatever. So I fell back from that deal. And then later on, I think like a couple of years later, Peter Parker had died. So then, you know, everything was like a little standstill here and there, whatever the case may be. But, you know, like during that process, it still didn't stop me from learning everything I need to know as far as like production-wise and also the business aspect of this.
Definitely. And, you know, you said when you eventually hooked up with the Wu later on, of course, you know, the most two notable were the founding members, GZA and RZA. You know what I'm saying? And they were both coming out of, you know, kind of very, you know, shady deals with their, you know, with their labels before they got in, you know.
Right.
So this was kind of set, you know, so that was something, you know, of course, everybody knows about, you know, with GZA, you know, Words from the Genius, you know, and then, of course, Prince, you know, RZA when he was Prince Rakim, you're like, oh, we love you, Rakim, and all that, you know.
Right, right.
So those
yeah.
Just really, really be digging. Yeah, man, so it's like, you know, pretty much we're all, you know, so you learn, so pretty much as, you know, you pretty much were in the early stages of what would become Wu-Tang, you know, what was it like to see, you know, GZA and RZA from those stages and where they were still developing, and then ultimately what would arguably become the most influential crew of the modern hip-hop era?
Well, actually, I didn't get to see RZA and GZA until like 95. Basically, not long after the first album came out and everything, when RZA used to come around, because I normally, like, at that time I was just coming home from jail.
Gotcha.
So it wasn't really much I could do at that time because the paroles and everything else, but like, you know, RZA would come around and he'll play chess with the kids and everything and all that. And then, you know, I would just watch him talk and just listen, you know, because a lot of times when I'd be around the clan, I'd just be on my listening thing. I'm on my learning stages, so I'm just learning, you know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? And then I take all that in and then I make it do what it do with what I have, you know?
Yeah, you know, like,
now, what were some
like
of the things that... I was going to ask, what were some of the things that you mainly soaked up from RZA that stuck with you to this day?
Whatever's in your head, get it out. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
One time when RZA was doing the movie thing for Domestic Violence. It wasn't Domestic Violence, it was the Bobby Digital thing. And, We walked from the movie set. We just felt like walking, right? And RZA said, the best time in my life was when I was living in poverty, and I get it. You know what I'm saying? Because that's when you was the most hungriest, and that's when the struggle was struggles, you know? And then, like, after a while, like, once you hit a certain standpoint, a lot of people seem to lose that bite and seem to lose that spark. But, you know, watching RZA go hard, RZA stayed going hard at it. And RZA was one of the type of dudes that he'll always go out the box, especially when it comes to making tracks and everything. So I basically learned a lot of that from him, just watching him do what he do on the machines and everything. Even though he wouldn't let me learn it, but I had to learn it myself. So I did it myself. I just watched, and then I just watched what buttons they push and everything else. And then when everybody leave, I start pushing buttons myself, and then I start recording myself. And then when cats come in, they be like, "Oh, you did that?" I'm like, "Yep." And then everybody would shake their head, and then we all just blow it down, and then we on to the next thing.
And, you know, I mean, definitely, you know, from what it was, because when you look at that era, man, it's like, you know, like you said, when you met them in 94, 95, so you figure, like, the Wu phenomenon is, like, in full bloom in terms of what y'all are doing, you know, collectively, I mean, so it's like, you know, so you really are a part of two golden eras, you know, and seeing, you know, from the 88 and then going into that era, man, I mean, it's like... Just what was the whole feel of hip-hop, the vibe of it back in the day? What was it like during that time in terms of just not only the Wu, but just other acts you saw, like Nas, Biggie, O.C.?
You know, I could say it's mainly like when you hear something hard. Like back then, you know, records was really getting broken. You know what I'm saying? DJs was on their thing, hard body. You know what I mean? And... You could break a record out of to the stations. A lot of times, you go to block parties and break records. So it's like when I first heard Nas and I first heard Biggie, I was like, "Oh, this era about to change one time." You know what I mean? So, of course, you know, I'm listening to it. I'm like, "Wow, this is." crazy. And during that time, I was basically was in the streets, hard body. You know, we're not going to get into what I did in the streets, but let's just say I was in the streets. And, you know, I took a time off and everything and all that. And, like them days, even like, you can't replace them type of times, especially when just hearing it, he'd be like when I first heard Party and Bullshit, I first heard Party and Bullshit in Atlantic City. That's where I was staying at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first heard it, I was like, oh, this shit is hard. You know what I mean? So now I'm doing
Yeah, that's what's missing.
Yo.
Yeah, and I mean,
what's really missing. That's what's missing in today's society, because I remember when you used to feel like a big event, like a big monumental event when a popular artist was going to drop a joint, like the world would stop. Like, we can even go back to when Michael Jackson was about to drop the Black and White video on Fox.
Yeah, they did like a Super Bowl B-slide. They cleared out everything for it. You know, I mean, it was a big event, and like you said, man, like, I remember back in the day when that was off the Who's the Man soundtrack in 1992 when Big dropped Party and Bullshit, and it was a dope-ass
track. That was crazy.
Yeah.
Like, when I first heard that, not long after that, I started my group, LTZ,
mm-hmm.
You know what I mean, which was broken down from Looney Tunes and everything else because we didn't want to be confused with the Loonies at that time because
right.
They was also coming out at that time. You know what I mean? So we broke it down to LTZ. You know what I mean? We basically just stayed local with it. You know what I mean? Because, you know, it wasn't no internet back then. So, you know, you had to get around the best way you could get around. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So we used to selling cassette tapes and all that. And yes, people, cassette tapes. You know what I'm saying? Those were the real mixtapes, not CDs. Now, you know what I mean? So it was
yeah.
Like... It was like, you know, we go out there, we make it do what it do. We'll play the music. I mean, it was a worthwhile experience. You know what I mean? Especially, like, when we was doing shows back then. You know what I mean? Because a lot of us was just out there just to be out there. But, like, one thing that we did took serious was that craft. And every day, you know what I mean? It was just during that time I was back and forth, you know, the jail shit. And then when I came out, you know, parole had a thing for screwing me over every couple of years, you know what I'm saying? But besides that, you know, I got that done and came back to New York, you know what I mean? My people took me to 30s crib. And then it was just crazy. Everything just actually just fell into play and all that, you know what I mean? And then, like,
mm-hmm.
after a while, after, you know what I'm saying, with the, like, Dirty was doing what he had to do, Dirty was locked up doing, you know what I'm saying, knocking out his bit or whatever the case, and being Papa took me under the wing. Buddha Monk actually showed me how to, you know what I'm saying, work the ASR-10 and everything, you know what I mean? Like, Buddha, like, basically just... That gave me all the workings with it, you know what I mean? On some hands-on shit. And then from there, you know, it took a little minute, but from there, you know, I kind of mastered it. And then I just started just getting my production on. You know that? And I just started.
So, yeah, you got that XR, you know, that P1200, all of that, you know, I mean, so it's like, was it the Akai? You know, all of that, man. I mean,
mm-hmm.
those are like staples of the you know, culture in terms of equipment back then.
Yeah, all those joints is definitely blueprints, especially like the Roland S10, all that. The Tascam,
yeah.
The Kurzweil, all those, you know what I mean? Even the Korgs, even though the Korgs came in later with the Tritons
the
and everything.
Man. Yeah.
You know what I mean? They came in way later, but you know, that all has a part to do with this music shit.
Yeah. I mean, the Casio, I mean, all of that, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
it's like,
yeah, even down to a little Casio. I remember making a beat off of one of them joints. And the Casio had, like, the little sampler shit on it to where it could record your voice and all that. Man, listen, we had a ball, B. It, like, now, back then, it was the analog days.
Right.
So it wasn't no digital shit or nothing like that. You had to do it over cassette tapes or reels.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And, like, a lot of people use reels, but then for cats that didn't have reels, what they would do is they would get a karaoke machine with two tape decks and everything, and then they'll buy a whole thing of tapes and go through at least five or six tapes before they get one joint perfect the way they wanted to get it perfect off a karaoke machine in a Casio.
I remember reading the Wu-Tang manual, you know, when RZA was writing about it, and it seems like you and him both have similar journeys on your sonic treks in terms of, you know, really, you know, self-teaching yourselves of how to really, really work those machines, man. But it's like, you know, but I mean, when you just look at some of the, just some of the beats that came out, you know, during that time, I mean, whether it was Machine Gun Funk, whether it was Halftime, Party and Bullshit, you know,
sir.
Wrong Side of the Tracks. I mean, you know, these are like, you know, you all epitomize the essence of what that East Coast, you know, sound was, you know, all the way to New York, Jersey, you know, Philly, you know, it's just, you know, I mean, it just, the energy y'all brought, I don't think really can be appreciated enough for ushering in that era. And when you talk about, you know, DM, about what it was in terms of how you marketed your music, you know, of course, you know, we've said this, you know, King and myself plenty of times on the show, you know, Rap City, Video Music Box, you know, Yo MTV Raps, you know, I mean,
right.
These were really the outlets.
Back then,
if you
Video
had
Music
business,
Box was
yeah.
our outlet. It wasn't even MTV back then. Video Music
Shout
Box
out to Uncle
was
Ralph
our only outlet. Shout out to Ralph McDaniels. Yes. Video Music Box was our only outlet. You know what I mean? It was Video Music Box, and then they had a channel to where they was showing videos, and you could order video. You could like call in and order the videos.
Was it
Make
It or
like
Break It video?
I think it was no. Make It or Break It came later. This is like some other thing. Where like they'll play the videos or whatever, and.
Mm-hmm.
It's something. I forgot it. I forgot the whole format of it, but I do remember it fully because every time I would hit that channel, either somebody was playing Aha or some other stuff. You know what I'm saying? But it had, like, a lot of videos on there, including, like, early rap joints, like Run DMC and them, where they did the joint with Aerosmith and, you know, the pre things. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those are our own. Those are our only two outlets, and they wasn't even on regular TV channels. They was on the other joints where you had to use the other knob. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know what I mean? Like after a while, then there was then MTV, and then that's I think Run DMC made that crossover to MTV first. If I'm not mistaken, Aerosmith.
I want to say Michael Jackson. I want to say Michael Jackson may have had because Michael Jackson's Beat It was the first, not Beat It, Billie Jean. I think that was the first video to be shown.
It was, matter of fact, it was Billie Jean, but I'm talking about as far as hip hop. I think it was Run DMC and Aerosmith.
Yeah, Run DMC and Aerosmith with Walk This Way, you know, Raising Hell album. I believe that was 85.
Yeah, and that right there opened a lot of doors. That opened a lot of doors for hip hop.
Yeah.
As far as on the crossover scene.
And on top of that, with crossover radio was dope to do because we talked a couple of shows ago about college radio and how important that was. That's
right.
Matter of fact, that was a big introduction to a lot of the up and coming acts. Out here.
During the 90s, college radio was definitely definitely would break hip hop because a lot of underground stations would just pop up out of nowhere. You know what I mean? You got to hear it at a certain time, like Stretch and Barbito. They was doing their thing underground for a long time. You know what I'm saying? Before they even got onto like a main thing. Like, at that time, it was Hot 97. What you know is like, man, this culture is so amazing, man. The history behind it is crazy. It's just that a lot of cats saying that they hip-hop and they not. They just rappers. There's a difference between a rapper and a hip-hop artist. A rapper just rap about what they see. A hip-hop artist lived this. You know what I mean? Like I always say, there's a difference between a song and a record. A song is just what it is, a song. A record is something right. that's going to last not only now, but 50 to 100 years later, that record will still last and will still bang.
Yeah, I mean, like KRS-One said, hip-hop, you know, rap is something you do. Hip-hop is something you live.
Always.
You know, and I mean, that's, you know, when you look at that era, man, and just all of it, the, you know, just that time of it, where do you see from there, from what it is where you came up in to where it started changing in terms of the business to even how the music was, the type of music that was being put out?
Everything started changing. Honestly, everything started changing around 2000s, like in the 2000s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because like the corporations knew how strong this hip hop thing was, right? And during that time, the A started coming up.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying?
So,
right now, good groups, beautiful groups. You understand what I'm saying? Beautiful groups. However, the corporation, the big corporations decided to like not only open that door, which was a good thing, but they also was slowly taking away that the essence of hip hop. Because remember, Public Enemy was going hard with the politicalness and everything else. You know what I mean? Soon you didn't hear much from Public Enemy no more because they constantly doing. I figure like they, it's like it got things in play that will allow it to be what it is for so long. But when it gets too powerful, they got to shut it down and everything to dumb people off.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
But you know one thing. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
One thing, DM though. Even in the situations when we look at where it started changing, even in the. You know, even with that era, you know, even in the 2000s, when you look at some of that stuff that came out during that time, man, it's like it's crazy because even the stuff we didn't think was, you know, maybe the best really is like way past some of the stuff that comes out today. You know, I mean, you know, but then again, that's also, I guess if I could rephrase it, there was really not a whole bunch of whack stuff coming out during that time.
It wasn't a whole bunch of whack stuff coming out that time. What it was, everybody stopped being hard and wanted to party more and get into whatever they was getting into.
Right.
Which actually took away from everything else. If you notice, like during that time, when everybody started doing their thing and wanted to do all this booger foot and you know wanted to shake and all this other stuff, underground hip hop was on the rise.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because they took all the stuff that was normally on the radio and they stopped playing it.
Yeah.
So these dudes was getting knocked off their labels and everything, and that's when they started becoming independent. And then the hip hop scene on the underground just straight up blew up. You know, as far as the underground scene now, the underground scene is still hard body.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when we had,
yeah,
you know,
the under, rock, you know. Yeah, the underground scene ain't going to never lose its edge. It's just.
Not even. You're going to still hear that boom bap.
Yeah, it's never going to lose.
You're still going to hear them bars. You're going to hear what you want to hear. You understand what I'm saying? That you're going to hear that stink that you need to hear. You know what I mean? But right now, as far as hip-hop, is it diluted? Yeah. But, however, you still got artists. And I'm talking about this generation artists that actually still keep the essence of hip-hop going. Like, you got your J. Cole's, you got your Kendrick Lamar's. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it is what it is.
Facts.
You know what I mean? You got your Joey Badasses. I mean, like, hip-hop ain't really going nowhere. It's just, you know what I mean? It's just that cats got to do what they need to do to make it pop off. You know? Everybody trying to be trend. Everybody want to follow behind everybody else. Let me show you something. At the end of the day, hip hop lost, like this level of hip hop lost its originality. Why they lost their originality? Because everybody wanted to sound like the next dude singing the same thing, and it all pertains to absolutely nothing.
Because it came much easier to be a copycat.
Yeah. And you know one thing, y'all, too, and we always talk about this, when you look at what it was during that time, man, you know, back in the day, like you said, DJs broke records. I remember when I was a youngin' back in the day, in like the 90s, like, you could hear something from anywhere, East Coast, West Coast, down south. There was no regional bias on it. Like, if it was dope, you heard it. And, you know, it really introduced you to a lot of, you know, to a lot of artists. You know, I mean, like Deadly Threat, you know, down with Ice Cube and them, Cam, you know, Artifact, you know, Compton's Righteous, you know, Looney, you know, King C, you know, I mean, it was just
fall. It was a wild melting pot.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, like during that time. Like when Ice Cube and them came into the game. It was sweet.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? And it came it makes it funny, it came in at the right time. You understand what I'm saying? Because the you know what I'm saying? That was needed. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, it's just that energy is always needed, because you know people always, they can bring a lot of the music, but the energy is what can shift the culture to a dynamic. Even like when DMX came in with the Rough Riders, shift the energy.
Right.
When you guys came in, shift the energy back up to the East. And I think Griselda's doing a great job of doing that too, but they bringing that back to the town.
Honestly, Griselda's doing a great job, because at the end of the day, these is young dudes that did their homework on hip-hop, right? And not only did they do their homework on hip hop, they decided to do what they want to do without nobody saying without whatever. They just did what they wanted to do. They put their own bread up, and they did what they needed to do. And now guess what? Their hard work is paying off. So I salute Griselda all day.
You know, and the one thing about it, because we got to touch on so many points with that, because you know. Cause we got to get back to, you know, how'd you feel, you know, we all really first started seeing the Woo really blow. But like I said with Griselda, because King will tell you, I'm a diehard Griselda fan. And, you know, one thing about it is to watch them in terms of how they, because when you listen to their music, if I could even go as far as out there, and somebody can correct me in the comments when we post this show on YouTube, it seems like they stay with that analog sound. You know, it's everything about them resonates. And you're a producer, engineer, everything, DM. So, you know, you can hear the sonics in terms of the nuances of it. But when you listen to it, it definitely – the beautiful thing about what Griselda does, shout out to Conway, Benny Westside, you know, Boldy James, you know, all of them, man. You know, it's like, you know, what they've done is that their music can go hard in any era, you know, of course, and Armani Caesar too, can't forget her, you know, their music, the thing is, you could listen to their, it takes you back to an era, it could be a 93, and simultaneously it's still present,
but they're young dudes, they're a bunch of young dudes that spit 90s tracks.
And
you understand what I'm saying? And they go hard on it, and then on top of it, they still stay relevant to this fashion of hip hop if they choose to. However, the majority of their music is 90s type beats. You understand what I'm saying? So they stay within their realm, but they always let cats know also within certain tracks. Listen, I could do that stuff too, but they you know what I mean? I like their core of it. So, you know what I mean? Definitely salute to them dudes.
Man, any era, if Griselda came out 25 years ago, they would have been huge still. You know, that's the beauty. They still would have been huge.
Mm-hmm.
So when we look at the Woo, who really laid that blueprint for what Griselda would become, what was it like to really see, because, you know, what was it like to really see everybody growing up, like, you know, in terms of, like, I mean, 1993, fall of 1993, I believe it was November 24th. Maybe I'm off a month or a day or two. Enter the 36 Chambers drop. Now, before then, all through the summer, starting around March, we're going back into the early, you know, late, you know, going into winter, spring, summer, you know, Protect Your Neck drops, Method Man drops, you know, and it's like these songs basically just rock all summer, you know, and I mean, you know, and then even after the album drops, you know, we get Cream, you know, we get a video for Cream, you know, we get Cat, you know what I mean? We just get so many other hits. You know, Can It Be All So Simple?
Right.
You know, I mean, what was it like to just not only see a dope product drop, but a dope product drop that would totally be an indelible, irreplaceable, infinite, and monumental solidification of that hip-hop culture that is still relevant today? When did you all know
something
was really going to be there?
Enter the 36 Chambers dropped, I was still living in right? I remember my dude buying his records, right? And he bought two of them. He bought two of them, so you know what I mean? I'm listening to it on the tables and everything. But, yo, this is some hard shit. You know what I mean? Now, they had did a video promo, I think, for they did a video promo for that channel I was telling you about. They were telling Cass, you know what I mean, to order the video and everything else, because they had a the channel had a listing from A to Z or whatever, and you could just call in or whatever the case may be whenever the name of the thing come around. So I happened to look at it. They was all on the stoop and everything. I'm looking. I'm like, oh, wow, that's Russ, which, you know, which was Dirty and everything. So I'm like, all
right,
that's what's up.
Jones.
You know what I mean? So I'm like, wow, that's crazy. So, you know what I mean? So then I'm listening more than, you know, the parties that we do with these records was crazy. It was, oh, my God. Nothing was more lit than a 1990s house party, Lord. You understand what I'm saying? The 90s house parties was the shit, especially when you playing them joints like Wu-Tang and Nas and Biggie and Father MC and the list could just go on and on and on and on, yo. But like, it was crazy. And then, like, you know, when I got back to New York, I didn't even know that I was going to be going to Dirt's crib when my boy came and he checked me out and everything. Yo, come on, let's go. Where are we going? Take you somewhere. He took me straight to Dirty's crib. Dirty looked at me and said, boy, I looked down, I was like, wow. And it was mad years before, you know what I mean? Mad years that's passed before I even seen him again. Because, you know, like a lot of people knew that, like me and Ray Song, which is the zookeeper for Brooklyn Zoo, you know, we used to go to public school together. And then, you know, after that, you know how that is. But like during that era, I mean, like, it smelled different too. Like, you could tell like it just had a whole smell to it. The air, everything. You understand what I'm saying? Everything was different back then. It's I can't even really explain it, but man, just being around
that
was crazy. Yeah, man. And then like when I first saw everybody together in 36 Chambers, Papa Wu took me there like on one weekend. And this was when they was playing the it wasn't the Triumph one, I think it was Pinky Ring. And we all sitting there looking at the video, right? We all sitting there looking at the video and all that. No, matter of fact, it was the jump off video. You're sitting there looking at the jump off video, right? So me and Deck standing next to each other. Deck was like, yeah, I heard that sample before. And then I told him, nah, that's that LL Cool J Rampage joint. You know what I mean? Then I broke it down and everything else. Nah, but that's another dude that's always LL is that dude, man. You know what I mean? He's that dude. But like, Them days, B. I wouldn't trade that in for nothing. You know what I'm saying? Just the experience, just being there, watching the magic happen, or carrying crates to the joint, being on stage with these artists while they doing their thing. I was on stage with Public Enemy when they did the Fight the Power video. You know what I mean? Me and my cousin and everything, because we also performed that day. And they did the Fight the Power video on the same block that Spike Lee shot the movie at, which was on Stuyvesant between
Do the right
Tennessee
thing.
And Lexington.
Yeah, do the right thing.
Right. You know what I mean? So that was when cause like how they did the video, like they had did a march from that block, and they walked up Utica Avenue until they hit Fulton Street, and then they walked back. And everything. Flav was at me. Flav was that boy. Flav was in another world. I mean, my dude was just happy. It's crazy when you could just be around these type of dudes. And these was dudes that me and my cousin was looking up to, because my cousin brought me into the music thing. You know what I'm saying? And this is like way before the Wu shit and all that. But like we had to Fight the Power video shoot. I'm like, wow. Just watching the S1Ws do their shit, you know what I mean? Standing next to Terminator X-Ray's cutting. Wow, that's good. That was like the most glorious experience I ever had, G. And then when I with them, like seeing all that, but then watching Positive K and them perform, it make me want to do it more. You know what I mean? It make me want to get more to it and everything else. And like any other dude, you know, I may have my good times, I may have my bad times, but regardless of the fact, you know what I'm saying, that music ain't going nowhere. I'm still going to do that regardless. Like Buster said, I'll be $1.60 by the time I'm done with this.
Man, I mean, and when you look at it, man, that era was just so historical, because I don't think people give our listeners, Dungeon, a real, from the best way you can really bring it from your heart. Because I don't think Public Enemy and X-Clan, especially X-Clan, shout out to, you know, Brother Jay, Professor X and all them. I mean, what did it mean for the culture in terms of the message that they had in terms
of
empowerment?
It was spitting the truth, B. These dudes were spitting the truth, even when Rakim was doing, even when Rakim came out and all that. But Rakim ain't no Public Enemy. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I'm being 1,000 with that. Public Enemy... Public Enemy records was about the truth, G, and the beats was off. The beats and everything was so put together, G, that it was just crazy.
Bomb Squad, yeah, Hank Shockley, the Bomb Squad.
Yes, sir.
It was put together with perfection. You know what I mean? One of my favorite joints that PE did, I think he did one with Ice Cube and Big Daddy
Burn
King,
Hollywood
Burn Hollywood Burn.
Burn Hollywood Burn.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? When I heard that motherfucking joint and the way that it's put together, it was crazy. And then there was another beat that was just a little, it was a beat that was done, and it was only a snippet instrumental. And I think Madonna had used it.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot the name of the joint, though, but it was on that same album. I remember that beat like yesterday. Doom, 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 doom. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Madonna used it for Justify My Love or some shit like that. Justify My Love.
Yeah.
That joint.
I mean, but what was the collab
one PE joint you guys forgot about was Welcome to the Terror Donk. I remember Tyson used to come out of that.
Oh, but come on. You can never forget about that. No, you can't forget about Welcome to the Terror Dome. That was the starter.
No.
I got so much trouble on my mind, refuse to lose. Here's your ticket to the drummer, get wicked. Come on, G.
And you look at the guy Tyson fight. I'm like, yo, man, this dude, they better might as well get a body bag for this dude, man. It's over.
And when we hit joints like that when we was younger, the energy was so fucking amped, God. Like, man, listen, I remember we always used to be in the corner, and we would get like a box of beers, and we'll drink beers and just listen to Public Enemy and X-Clan and who else was that? A Nice and Smooth, Young Black Gangsters. What's this motherfucker's name?
Schoolie D.
I forgot his goddamn name, but he made this joint called Champion. I forgot his damn name, but it was hard. Nine Double M also. When I was that dude,
okay.
Nine Double, I could kill anybody. Say Nine Double M was the first DMX. You understand what I'm saying? Because the rat, because the raspy voice. When you first heard that shit, come on, B, doom doom doom, you felt that shit inside your chest. You understand what I'm saying? You felt that shit inside. And when you hear joints like that, what you want, nah? Fat beats for my rhymes. What? Ooh. You know what I mean? That was like a little bit past the Just Ice era. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, man, he took it back. Yeah.
Yo,
he took it way back.
Those dudes, let me say something to you. Those dudes is like the cornerstone for basically who Dungeon Master is. Because I used to listen to these dudes and just be like, wow. Wow. Remember that rapping Duke Duke? Da-ha, da-ha. That was the shit. You know what I mean? That was the shit. All that shit was part of hip hop. Because during that time, Public Enemy had their political shit. Nine and these dudes had that hard shit, and then you had the rapping Duke and Young MC and these other dudes on their conscience shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They was on their party/conscience shit. And don't forget, Will Smith was also part of this.
The first rapper to win a Grammy in 1989.
You know what I mean? Fresh Prince, the Fresh Prince and Jazzy Jeff, there was also a part of this. But the good thing, one thing I can say about them, they always stayed in their lane with it.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the thing. That's how cats have longevity. You stay in your lane and you do what you do. Don't worry about what anybody else doing. You just concentrate on what the fuck you're doing. You know what I mean?
You know, and it's wild, man, you say that, because one thing about it, because for those who don't know this story, Will Smith tried his hand at first being a gangster rapper with a whole bunch of cuss words, and his grandmother found his rhyme book, and then she wrote it. When he looked at it, she said, only ignorant people use these kind of words. And that's when he decided, you know, and it hit him, and he was like, you know what? You know, he just decided he had that epiphany that he was just going to rhyme clean the rest of the way.
And the good thing is, it worked for him.
Yeah, and for those of our
because
audience,
him
really,
doing that.
Go ahead.
Him doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I could say, just like Run DMC, when Will Smith made that leap, he already crossed over then. He just didn't know it because he appealed to. He appealed more to the white audience than the blacks because the blacks thought he was soft. But you can't dispute art. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
Back then. Because the streets be talking and everything and all that. You can say what you want to say back then about the guy, but look at him now.
Yeah.
And he's still spitting and he's still rhyming. And I ain't going to front. That joint that he did with Joyner Lucas... That, I ain't going to say
Will
nothing about
go.
That, boy.
Will can still
that,
go.
What can he still go? That joint he made with Joyner, they damn near sounded like partners and shit. I'm like, what the hell?
I
said,
and
this
I mean,
boy
you
doing
got,
it.
And you got to, and I this tell shit. Everybody, you got to remember, Will is like, 52 now? And he still was killing it. And for those that don't understand how dope Will and Jazzy Jeff were, I tell them, take it back to their 1987 debut, you know what I'm saying? I mean, like, they really, like, that is hip-hop to the core in terms of,
I
think it was called, once they was in the house, I believe, if I got my facts right, but I could be wrong. You can see Max and Facts get it wrong sometime, but they really, I mean, those guys, musically, and I tell them one thing, too, where you talk about we talk about Will Smith rhyming. Dude, can we just give a shout out, just a super legendary shout out to DJ Jazzy Jeff with the music that he's done over the years. It turns out to be one of the greatest ever producers to do it. The man gave us
The man gave us Jill Scott. I mean, how much more fun he gave us Jill Scott. He gave us Jill Scott.
Facts. I mean, like, this hip hop is a magnificent culture for people that, if you really want to learn, this is a magnificent culture. A lot of dudes just take our culture and they twist it into the fuck shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And of course it's gonna do that because, you know what I'm saying, motherfuckers been doing that shit for years. It's not like it's first starting. This shit been going on since James Brown and then was doing that Chitlin Circuit shit. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, and if you really think about it, James Brown and them dudes, they was hip hop.
Yeah,
it just wasn't labeled hip hop.
The JBs, I've said this on the show before. You really have to look at them in terms of really laying it down, in terms of the, in terms of those break beats, the JBs, you know,
Jay's
with ad libs, even with some of he really, really laid down that template. You know, in terms of what hip hop would eventually turn into.
All this shit I learned and I listened and all of that shit actually helped me to develop the person who I am. You know what I'm saying? So I'm always grateful for that and everything. I'm grateful for that time I just decided to listen to a record and broke my mom's needle. If it wasn't for that, I probably wouldn't even be into hip hop. Got an ass whooping behind it though, but shit, I had to listen to that record. You know what I mean? And the first hip hop record that I listened to was Dougie Fresh shit. He had The Show on one side, and he had another joint. Nobody don't even really play it because they was always playing The Show. But it was a joint on the other side, right? I forgot the name of it, but it was more like a poppy feel to it. Don't. You know what I mean? I remember the beat like yesterday. You know what I mean? I just don't remember the title and everything else. But that was like the first record that I played, tried to attempt the scratch and all that. And then when my mom's caught me, oh boy, it was a wrap. It was a wrap. You know what I mean? And during those times, you can't play with the parents, the record players and none of that. You know what I mean? That's a no-no. You don't touch those. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Man, hip hop.
Well, the show was Lottie Dottie. Lottie Dottie was like the B side for that, I believe.
Nah, it wasn't. It was something else.
Okay, it wasn't. Okay, it was something else. Okay.
It was a party joint because it wasn't.
Okay.
It wasn't, and actually, it wasn't. It wasn't even Lottie Dottie. It was what was it? The 6 minute thing. It was a single that Dougie Fresh came out with, right? Where he was doing the beatboxing, and I think it was was it Lottie Dottie? No, it wasn't Lottie Dottie. It was something that Dougie Fresh did. It may be Lottie Dottie though, but it was something that Dougie Fresh did. But on the other side of that record, and I remember because it was a gray label.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It was a gray label with red writing and shit. And
okay, it wasn't making
Dougie
music
Fresh.
With your mouth. I don't think it was that.
No, it wasn't that. It was some other shit, but it was like one of the first joints that Dougie Fresh came out with and shit.
Right.
And it was more like synthesizers was playing in it and all that other shit, you know what I mean? Yeah, not like that though, but it was more like boom, dum, da dum, 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 da dum. There was like, you know what I mean? It was like a party joint that he did, but nobody wasn't really paying attention to that joint. They was paying attention to the song on the other side.
Right.
You know what I mean? Word. Shit. It might have been going some shit. I know that shit was hard when I first listened. That was making so funny. That was the only joint that I would listen to, that joint. Not the one, not the popular one. I was listening to that shit because I was learning how to cut.
Mm-hmm.
And everything.
But you know what's wild? But I'll tell you what's wild though, man. It's like, you know, when we take it back, when we listen to tape, you know, when King, you know, you and King were talking about Public Enemy's Welcome to the Terror Dome. So we have this awesome amalgam
of sports, hip hop culture, black pride, all rolled into one simultaneously, and nothing was interrupted. Nothing was different. It all fit together during that era. And
yeah, everything fitted the way it fitted until Rodney King.
Man, after Rodney King, we saw a whole different level of.
That's when California stood up on hip hop.
That was a rebel music.
That was a change right there.
Yep. After that Rodney King thing, California stepped their game up and they was going hard.
The fall of 1992 when Cube dropped Wicked off the Predator album. And he said, 1, 2, 3, and I come with the Wicked style. You know that I'm from
but then,
the Wicked
and then,
crew.
And then if
like
you think about
crew,
it, also,
was like,
Texas was also Texas was also on the rise, too, with Ghetto Boys.
Ghetto Boys. Yeah, shout out to Jay Prince. We respectfully, affectionately call the old man. You know what they did in 1991. Yeah, man, we got a lot of love for Rap a Lot, man. Shout out to Houston, man. They did that album, We Can't Be Stopped, in 1991. Yeah, that was the page turner for them.
Yeah, man, like this is the most beautifulest thing. And now, even though everything is digital, it still doesn't matter. At the end of the day, the work got to speak for itself. You know what I'm saying? It's just that a lot of cats is doing too much with their vocals when they need to just relax and just be easy with it. You know what I'm saying?
I think that comes from lack of having true artist direction right there, because people just want to just bring a bunch of producers just to make hit records, but not really have that what they call it artist.
A&R, artist and development, artist and repertoire.
Development. I had my brain fog a little bit, but artist development.
Well, I look at it like this. Like, nowadays, all it takes for a dude to get on right now is a laptop and a mic. They don't do research and nothing. They just see what their boy's doing and they figure, fuck it, they could do the same thing too. No, they cannot. You gotta do homework. You gotta do research. Just because you have a laptop and a mic doesn't mean you're nice. And everybody that's telling you you're nice, stop listening to your peoples on the corner. Listen to your shit. Take your shit somewhere else, man.
You know,
you want real opinions of how your music listen to? Don't let nobody you know listen to it.
Right. You know, it's wild, Dungeon, because we shout out to Uncle Richie Rich up in the Bay Area, Oakland stand up. You know, when we had Richie Rich on the show a couple years ago, you know, Uncle Rich was giving us game and he talked about, because you know, Oakland is real with it. In Oakland, he was like, in Oakland, like, you weren't even getting in the studio to record anything until the homies thought you were nice enough to do it. They were like, nah, you got to put off of the town. So if you're not nice with it, you're not getting in the studio to do nothing.
Let me tell you something. When I first started to take this shit serious and everything else, it was engineering and everything at Papa Wu Studio and all that shit. Let me tell you something, right? And one thing I could always thank my brother Buddha for and shit, he stayed on my ass about how I was doing my music and shit. You know what I mean? And they took me through some shit. Did I like it? Hell fucking no. But did it help me create? Did it help me better my craft? Of course. You know what I'm saying? That's why I would listen to these dudes and I'd be like, man, if y'all went through half of the shit that cats went through for this shit. You know what I mean? Like, cats literally bled for this motherfucking, bust guns for this shit. This shit ain't fucking easy. None of that shit. A lot of this shit is a life changer. You understand what I'm saying? All this shit is nothing but life. All this shit do is change lives, and it can either make you or break you. A lot of where a lot of people fuck up at is that their head gets stuck in their ass and they let their ego take over.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So when your head gets stuck in your ass, you let your ego take over. You're gonna fuck up.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Busta Rhymes said it best. Thank God for hip hop because it gave us a lot of jobs. You know. And you know, and also too, man, what you said is real because when a lot of these artists, what was the process of an artist back in, you know, during that time, you know, when you were coming up, what did an artist really have to do to really try to get themselves out there? Like in terms of, you know, like the label meetings, the auditions, the process of getting signed.
I almost got signed to Loud at one time, right? And the process for that was crazy. I just came home and everything. I hooked up with my peoples or whatever. She walked me right into the fucking office. We spoke with the A&R dude, right? He listened to my shit, right? And this is like the first joint that I actually put together. Like I put like the first album I actually put together and shit and everything else, samples and all. Like fuck it. So the A&R listened to it and everything else. Now this is the crazy shit. Now, dude was like, instead of me signing you to Loud, we could sign you to Judgment Records. Now back then, Judgment Records only had one artist. That was Tracy Lee. You understand what I'm saying? So I could have been labeled. I could have been label mate with him, which was all good. But however, somewhere down the process, Judgment Records collapsed.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that was done off and shit. You know what I mean? Definitely salute to Tracy Lee. And that, he's still doing his thing. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's always a process to this. Now, cats don't got to go to labels no more. They could just go on DistroKid and become their own label. But you know the fucked up thing about it is, you could do all that shit if you want to, but if you don't have no way of marketing and promoting your shit, it's just going to be up there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because right now, the game, right now, hip hop, everything is about marketing and promotion. Marketing and promotion. Make the stupid people see the pretty colors. Ooh, pretty colors. You know what I'm saying? That's what it's about now. You know what I'm saying?
And it's
a fucked up analogy, but that's how the corporations see shit now. We're going to make these stupid motherfuckers buy this dude. Let's make this dude wear a dress. You know what I'm saying? That type
you
of
know,
shit.
You know, and seeing we're going to go there, DM.
Yeah, we're going to go there.
You know,
we're going to go there. Fuck it.
Yeah, you know, and I'm all for it because I think this needs to be talked about. Seeing we've gone there with it. You know, when I look at this situation, King and myself, you know, my bro, we always talk about these on air and off air. And when we look at it, it's like, yo, it's like at one point even the fashion, you know, represented a sense of masculinity. You know,
now,
in terms
this,
of
that's the crazy shit. Hip hop and fashion always go hand in hand. However,
exactly,
where it fucks up at,
right?
Is that they let these motherfuckers that get onto their little sensitive ass fucking feelings and shit decide that they want to do some shit to get back at motherfuckers because they was all being picked on and bullied and shit when they was fucking kids. So they decide that they got a little power now. They could just screw everything the fuck over. That's just my saying. You know what I'm saying?
And they take it out on the cats that look like them when they would get thrown in them lockers growing up.
Yeah, I think you look good in this, dog. I think you look good in this, dog. Knowing damn well you fucking lying. You just want to make that. You just want to. You gotta just say you just want to downgrade that motherfucker, make a motherfucker look like boo boo cakes. You know what I'm saying?
You know, and one thing about it too is when we look at it, back in the day, just like with the music, because you had a lot of independent labels during that time. You know, in the 80s and even
early
90s.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, when they did it back then. When they did it back then, that was entertainment. Whether they was gay or not, that was entertainment.
Gotcha.
You understand what I'm saying? This shit right here is fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, a lot of it is.
Ain't no entertainment in this shit. This shit is fucking ridiculous. When them cats did, see, I'm going to give you a pure example. Elton John, Freddie Mercury, these dudes, Liberace, these motherfuckers did they shit with class.
Yes,
you understand
do.
What I'm saying? You knew exactly what the fuck they was. You knew exactly what preference they is. But guess what? You're going to respect these motherfuckers because they got fucking talent and they make some hard-ass shit. You can't deny a motherfucker that. You know what
you
I mean?
You know, they never really made a point to put them, you knew it, but they never made it a point.
Of course.
To
you knew it.
Personal life.
Did they,
public.
You knew
yeah.
it
because
they told you about it. But guess what? They wasn't flaming mm-hmm. about it neither.
Right, right.
You understand what I'm saying? They wasn't all fucking doing that shit that this fuck little nigga did on the fucking BET Awards. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
Because that was some fuck shit he did. I don't give a fuck what anybody say or anybody would try to justify it or, oh, that was cool. And that shit was not fucking cool. My kids watching that shit. You gotta, listen, what the motherfucker do, what they do, everything was all good until he kissed that motherfucker.
Yeah, you know, and with Lil Nas X, because we've said this before. Right, go ahead. Yeah, because I was going to
say,
you know, yeah. Go ahead, King, go ahead.
Listen,
go ahead.
If you want to be gay, be gay. Knock yourself the fuck out. It is what the fuck
right.
it is. But be mindful who the fuck is watching you when you're doing this shit, especially fucking kids, yo. You want to do that shit to show motherfuckers whatever, whatever, oh, I'm just not going to do what the kids want, then you keep your little performance going the way you keep your little performance and go prance your little ass the way you've been prancing your little ass, being happy like you don't flaunt the bag of dicks. But everything else after that, you bugging the fuck out, my G.
You know, one thing about
especially
it is that, yeah, go ahead, King, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say that too, man. It's like hip-hop opened up the door for this long ago because when Lil Wayne and Baby did it, it was like, I even looked at it like, yo, this is weird as hell. But
yeah,
they,
but
they
that's
the blind
that's,
eyes
that's,
up, he's hot.
But do not see, that's just talk show fuck shit. You know what I mean? And they trying to do that little father. That has nothing to do with what the fuck this little motherfucker did. And then on top of that shit, he gonna do a Michael Jackson theme with it. No, that's disrespectful. Mm. Now.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? Now I see that as disrespectful. However, that's what these motherfuckers want to encourage and everything else. So at the end of the day, you're going to always see dumb shit like that. And Lee Butler's no fucking different because if he didn't do that bullshit with Empire, this shit would even probably be popping off like that. He wants to make a difference on TV. Yeah, but see, when he made his little difference on TV, you did it prime time. You know how many motherfucking kids. The time Empire was coming on was like 9 to 10. Kids mm-hmm. are still fucking up during that time. You know what I'm saying? And of course they're going to be watching TV with their parents and all this other shit. Come on, B. Cats don't fucking understand. See what they're doing, they're pushing something that don't need to be fucking pushed. You understand what I'm saying?
About it, yeah, you know, one thing about it, you know, when we look at the hip-hop nation or just people in general, we have nothing but love and respect for nobody, you know, for anybody, whatever your lifestyle is. You know, we don't discriminate. But my
I respect any and everybody. But at the end of the day, it's how the fuck you carry yourself. It's how
exactly,
I respect you.
Exactly. Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
You know,
you could be the most fruitiest bandit on the fucking planet. If you carry yourself accordingly, I'm going to respect you and respect the fact that, you know what I mean, whatever. But, man, when it comes to other shit and it causes chaos and confusion amongst the masses, now I got to talk about it.
And there's nothing wrong with speaking on it because I think it needs to be spoken on because I've said this before, and I'm not being homophobic or anything when I say it because I have nothing against
the
community.
Ain't no such thing as fucking homophobic. That's just a word that these motherfuckers want to fucking put out there to make you feel bad about fucking cursing they fucking funny asses out.
Right. You know,
I don't feel bad about cursing out a fucking human being. If you fuck up, you fuck up.
Yeah.
I don't care, if you're gay, you're black, you're white, you're Chinese. I wouldn't care if you're a bear, a tree, a frog. You get cursed the fuck out.
And with what Lil Nas X is doing, man, it seems to me a lot of stuff is like, and I've said this before on the air, I'm like, dude, we get it. You're gay. I'm like, but it's like you just want everybody to just know it. I'm like, dude, we're in the 2000s.
You know the funny thing about it is?
2010, huh?
Check it out. He done already put it out there. That shit wasn't called for. All he could have did was just prance his little ass like he'd been doing and shit, smiling and shit. I mean, the look on his face was, I was like, this boy doesn't look like he done found a bag of dicks. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, it is the fuck it is. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
He all
right,
prancing
right.
around happy and shit. All right, fine. Knock your performance out. Do your little Michael Jackson tribute shit. Knock that out, whatever, whatever. But that ending
right.
shit, come on, B.
And stay ripping
no,
it off
no, 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 no.
I'm like, you know, and I'm like, dude, I'm like, you know, we get it. That's your lifestyle. And you know what?
Right.
But his
thing, that's your lifestyle.
His thing,
then guess what? Go ahead, flaunt it. But motherfucker, carry yourself as of. You
yeah.
know what I'm saying?
And he's trying to, and the thing is, I think the what I see that I think is really kind of an issue is that he's trying, he to me, and this is just me personally, he's trying to make himself out to be a novelty. I'm like, okay, let's break this down. Number one, you're
he was already a novelty.
He
was already a novelty with Old Country Road. He just didn't know it.
Right, but I'm like, he's not the first gay black
yeah,
person. He's
and
not the first gay black,
even
black,
nice.
Black celebrity.
No, he's
yeah,
not.
And he's not the first gay rapper. I'm like, dude. I'm like,
no, he's not.
Those things. Exactly. So I'm like, dude, why are you trying to act like you're special and you're none of those three things? I'm like,
none of it. That's the
exactly.
that's the funny thing about it. But if you think about it, he's not a rapper.
Mm.
He's not even considered
hip
hop.
He's
a pop
artist.
He's
an entertainer. Right. He's an
entertainer. He's a pop
artist.
So that's a whole thing. He's not Lil Nas X has nothing to do with hip hop. He's just a fucking pop artist. And that's another thing too. They keep labeling
mm-hmm.
these fucking pop fuckers as hip hop. None of these motherfuckers
mm-hmm.
is hip hop. They pop artists. It's a difference between
right.
a pop artist and a hip hop artist. None of these motherfuckers like Post Malone. It's nothing hip hop about Post Malone. He's a pop artist.
That dude started
he got
singing.
He got bars.
Like,
he got
yeah.
bars, yeah. But he's mainly pop. That's his thing. That's his
right.
lane. You know what I'm saying? I don't see nothing hip hop about that. Now, is he would I label him a rapper? Yes, I would.
Right.
Because
right.
he raps. So I would label
right.
him a pop artist that's a rapper. But hip hop, nope.
Yeah, and you know, and you make a great point about a dungeon because this is where they're trying to blur those lines in terms of what hip hop and rap is and kind of trying to have an all inclusive and then try to say then at the same time in the same breath try to say, well, you're being judgmental because you're trying to separate it. I'm like, no, because if you are a historian like all three of us are, you know there is a distinct difference in terms of what the genre and music is within that genre.
Yeah.
In terms of what is hip hop.
Straight like that.
You know, there is a distinct difference. And for the untrained ear,
and not to mention
what's happened now. Yeah. Go ahead, King. Go ahead. Go
yeah,
ahead.
Not to mention the fact that, man, even like, for example, even Frank Ocean, when he came out, you don't see him doing none of that.
Let me say so too. I respect Frank Ocean like a motherfucker because at the end of the day, he did his fucking thing, and then he came out, and he's still doing his thing. You don't see him going on fucking places and shit, kissing up on motherfuckers on TV and shit like that to cause some type of ruckus and shit. Like, you know what makes it so funny? When people do dumb shit like that, it builds fuck shit. Because if you notice, we talking about it. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talking about it. So at the end of the day, this motherfucker done basically done see through his fucking little plan and shit. I'm going to do something to get people to talk about
you know,
it. Yeah,
you know,
you did.
And the crazy part about it is, see, we both come for the era where, we all come for the era where, you know, if you straight shaming these dudes, whatever it be, like embarrassing them on the mic or kicking them in the ass, they out of here. But now they look at it like, oh, we going to get detention or we getting a lot of clout off this. Negative attention is good attention.
Yeah.
That's the way they look
yeah.
at it.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody is chasing clout and shit. Everybody clout chasing. Everybody reaching for something. Everybody reaching for the illusion. You know what I'm saying? And at the end of the day, these motherfuckers is giving it to them. You know what I'm saying? Confusing more people than ever. And then, mind you, it's still a fucking pandemic going on.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Until I hear authorities say that it's over, this shit ain't over. After the 4th of July, look how much shit done soared on the low.
Yeah. You know, and it's wild, man, because one thing about it,
you know what I mean?
Is that when we look at it from back in the day, Dungeon and King, when we look at how notoriety, fame was achieved back in the day. It was achieved through real artistry. You know, right. And even certain antics, you wouldn't even, there was dumb shit that went on back in the day, but God knows. I mean, a lot of rappers would be, you know, they would just, they would take themselves out of the game if they caught, if they got caught out there doing some dumb shit. Now it's almost like some of these new artists out here, the more stupid shit they can do publicly, the more clout they get.
If you think about it, why do you think Instagram is for? That same type of purpose. Instagram is nothing but Facebook with pictures.
True.
You know what I'm saying? Okay. So, of course, uh-huh. They're going to do a whole bunch of dumb shit. Now, one thing about the gram can make you or break you. You know what I'm saying? And these chicks is the ones that's falling for it, because every other post, you got a chick showing their ass. All right. If you want to show your ass, show your ass. But when you show your ass, at least wash your ass before you show your ass. You know what I'm saying? I mean, like, real talk. Nobody want to look at no brown spots and shit when you bend the fuck over. That shit is not appealing to nobody. You know what I'm saying?
True.
It's not fucking appealing. And there's plenty of bitches that do that shit, especially y'all light-skinned motherfuckers. It can easily be seen. Duh. You know what I'm saying? I mean, shit is just fucking crazy, man. But then that's the age that we live in. Like, one dude, he posted this shit right on the ground. All right, now, we all know recently this dude got killed in California on Instagram. He was on the gram and mm-hmm. She got killed. And shit. All right, now I saw that conversation. He had a conversation with his boy. Some dude walked up on him and dumped six on him.
Mm.
He looked into the camera, bleeding out, trying to talk. Him and the phone got slumped. When people post shit like that, I lose respect for their asses. You know what I'm saying? And then the comments that was behind it. All right, he got killed because he went over Nipsey's mural.
Mural, yeah.
So instead of whipping his ass, making him a public example so no one else won't do it, you'd rather shoot this motherfucker. Now, is that the most ass-backward shit or what?
You know...
See, that's the whole thing. People don't think.
And one thing
about
love
this mural, if y'all love this mural so much, instead of walking mm-hmm. up on this motherfucker and killing him, whip his fucking ass publicly, make him wash that shit the fuck off, and guess what? That's called an example. That calls this
right.
What happens when you fuck with something that is sacred. Walking up on a motherfucker and killing him ain't showing nothing. It ain't proving nothing. All it shows that your ass is very stupid, taking a body. And on top of that shit, it wasn't even fucking called for. And I mean that shit, right? That's the meaning of senseless fucking killing. That was senseless.
You know, and on one hand of it, you know, Dungeon, you're absolutely right. And on the other hand, you know, I tell people this, you know, once, but once you put certain energy out there, you ain't always going to be responsible for how it comes. Well, you are, you're responsible for doing
exactly.
what you did, but you can't say how
mm-hmm.
it's going to come back. You know, and one
right.
thing about it is, you know, he put something out there that, you know, was the killing him overkill? Possibly. But when you look at it for what he did, whether he directly disrespected the mural, whether Indian Red Boy actually directly disrespected it, or he was with the guy who did it, one thing about it is to basically kind of be nonchalant about it, because whoever snuffed him knows he was out there in some capacity. I'm like, dude.
Come on, the streets talk,
know,
G. The streets
exactly,
talk. At the end
exactly.
of the day, the streets talk. And at the end of the day, I mean, like, all right. Whip his ass. Make a public display about it. Whip his ass. You know what I mean? Popping him, to
mm-hmm.
me, just don't make no fucking sense. Because that's not for what? You wasted six bullets for what? Because a nigga disrespected a fucking painting? Now I'm going to speak in general. It doesn't matter who fucking mural it is. If the motherfucker disrespected it and you know he did it, or whatever the case may be, or you mad about it, you don't have to chill a motherfucker. Beat his ass. And have fun doing it. Simple shit.
Give him a swirl.
That way, That way he go lump. That's why he go back to where the fuck he at, all lumpy and bumpy, and everything else. But then again, you got these motherfuckers' mentalities that it'll be just ongoing shit. Because people got the brain capacity of fucking frying pans and salt. You know what I mean? They don't go no further past that shit.
You know, and while we're on that too, DM, because we definitely want to ask you about what's been going on, because, of course, we've talked about Biggie and Tupac so much, we don't listen to, like, bringing it up because there's so much to keep going on about
it. Sure, sure, right, yeah.
But it's a situation where, you know, when we think about it,
Tupac's shit was senseless and everything, and make it so funny. That happened the way it happened because everybody was in their business.
Right, right.
Everybody stuck their nose in their business, and behind that shit, both of them is gone.
Right. And we just use that as an example, but we also want to ask you too, Dungeon, what do you feel about, because we, on the low, not only just, you know, we've seen, I mean, the situation with King Von getting murdered. I mean, we've seen with FBG Duck getting murdered. I mean, where do you think, where did this all change to where, because back in the day, if you had a rap beef, it was usually confined to wax. If it turned street, it was mm-hmm. some real shit. But usually most of the time it was strictly on wax. You know, I mean, you know, we know even there was a bit of a, you know, consternation, you know, between the Wu and Big at one time. But it was never a situation where it was actually going to turn into something violent. There was never even
That shit with Big and Tupac wasn't supposed to even turn violent. Everybody from the same fucking area.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
Tupac is from New York. Tupac ain't
Harlem.
From fucking L.A.
He was born in Harlem.
Tupac is from New York. You know what I mean? And they want to turn that shit into an East Coast, West Coast thing. No, it was never an East Coast, West Coast thing. It was two men that had a fucking a miscommunication, and everybody stuck their fucking nose into it and turned it into shit that didn't need to be, including the fucking media at the time. You know
right.
what I'm saying? What's going on with right. these little dudes right now that's getting popped left and forth? That's gang shit. That's stupid
mm-hmm.
shit. That's gang shit. That's totally different. These niggas
right.
is doing what they're doing and whatever, and then these little motherfuckers got points to prove and shit like that. That's gang. That's little gang fuck shit. What happened to MO3? I don't know. All I know is he got caught in the highway and shit in Texas, and he got slumped, and he just came out with an album with Bootsy. Whether that was gang
yeah,
shit or not, don't know. But like at the end of the day, the thing is, they get these, they see these little dudes is flossing. You got these little niggas flossing and everything. They flossing and they popping shit. They even popping shit to each other on Instagram. So of course that's gonna lead to stupid shit. You got these. I mean, like I saw so many posters with these little niggas popping shit to each other. Yeah, I could do this. I did this. Come on, don't. That's clout shit right there. Until someone gets popped. Now, guess what? Not only is this motherfucker dead, but he can't spend no more money, and his shit is soaring like hotcakes. Guess who's spending that money? The labels.
Right.
The labels capitalize off death of black men. The labels guaranteed to capitalize off the death of black men. Especially black men that got the brain capacities of fucking salt and frying pans.
And you know what? If you're in the game about that, you could even see it how even with social media today, like you could put out something, you talk about the 5% or talk about pro-blackness or pro-black empowerment. They're not going to really green light that. But
no, they're not going to green light it. They stopped green lighting it with Public Enemy and everything. And then when Dirty did the shit at the Grammys, that was their excuse for them to even try to blackball Wu. You understand what I'm saying?
And for the rest
when Dirty
of the
did that shit on stage,
they should have won that album. They should have won mm-hmm. for that album, the rap album of
right.
the year. Yes, they should
right.
have won.
So
it.
Dirty,
yeah.
so Dirty spoke his truth. But guess
yeah.
what?
Mm-hmm.
Just like any other person of power, if they feel that they can't control you, they will what? Disassemble you in any shape, form, or fashion necessary.
And that album,
you know what I'm
got it right there, because that was they did the tour with Rage Against the Machine.
I'm gonna give you a perfect example. Bill Cosby was gonna buy NBC. Bill Cosby had the money to buy NBC. A black man had the money to buy a predominantly white company. So what did they do to make sure that he won't attempt to try to do anything else? They get a whole bunch of monkey broads from 19, whatever the fuck, before I was even fucking born, to talk about some shit that, motherfucker, it's been statute of limitations for that type of shit. And on top of that shit, during the 60s and 70s, everybody was getting fucking hot. Everybody. Every celebrity party in the 60s and 70s had coke and pills in that motherfucker. And if your ass was there, then guess what? You're partaking in it. If you didn't, you probably was slipping Mickey's too. That's what they was doing in the 60s and 70s when they was partying. But yet, y'all focus on this man. I'm fucking glad Cosby is home. He ain't need to be in fucking jail. He's nigga was too fucking old. But they did that to what? The silence, whatever shit that he was going to do that was going to basically be a profit for the culture. Come on,
well,
man.
One thing about it, because that's a very complex issue on a lot of levels with that, in terms of, you know, because we do know in the deposition he did admit to it, and that was where the loophole came in.
Of course he admitted to it.
It was
the 70s. Who did not was drugging with bitches in the 70s? Any motherfucker that was partying in the 60s and 70s with bitches, especially a celebrity, you cannot deny that shit. You was there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how can you deny it? It was the 60s, the 70s.
Yeah.
You're a star, and you're in these white people's cribs that has nothing but cocaine, pills, and alcohol, and bitches.
But it also becomes more complex with Bill in terms of the whole thing, in terms of his actual, you know, we step outside the issue, of course, with those, with the women and those, and everything. It also talks about his actual relationship with the black community in terms of things he said, you know, disparaging statements.
That's the whole thing. He could say that.
Mm-hmm.
You know why he could say that about the black community? Because everything he'd been doing was for the black community. See, when you do things for people and all they do is give you your ass to kiss and everything else, you'll be tight too. You know what I'm saying? That's why there's the term, not everybody can eat off your plate. You understand what I'm saying? Everybody can eat off your plate because these motherfuckers are scavengers. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, he said what he had to. He said what he said, but guess what? He was fucking right. Because out of every race, and I'm kidding, I'm being 1,000 about it. Out of every race on this planet, the worst race is the black one, because guess what? You know why? Because we don't know how to support each other. We too busy bringing each other fucking down.
Mm-hmm.
We too busy trying to fucking to be ahead. It's a crab in a barrel effect, man.
People wonder why it's like that. I'm like, shit. And then they try to marginalize slavery like it wasn't nothing. I'm like, the fuck, it ain't something. I'm like, look at what slavery did in terms of breaking up the black family.
Of course.
And destroying the unity. All of that.
Slavery was the catalyst to a lot of shit. Because they brought them over here, they put certain black people in charge of these people to dehumanize these people. That's where you got the term house nigga from.
Right.
Because these is the motherfuckers that they kept in the house and gave them the best of the shit while they gave everybody else pork and scraps.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? If you look at that, the perfect example is the Django.
Yeah.
Django was the perfect example of what was going
on.
Shout out
to Sam Jackson with that role, man. Whoa.
Yeah.
He was a legend in that one.
Yo.
Yeah.
Yes,
because that's how they was back then. That's exactly how they was back then. Let me tell you what they did to black men back then. Any black man that they thought there was a threat back then, they would dehumanize them by shoving shit up their asses. That's how they dehumanize the shit. If you was the most powerful black man or whatever, they would dehumanize them.
They rape them.
They straight up rape him. And guess what? He's no more a threat. You know what I'm saying? This shit is fucking crazy, B. And this is the shit that Public Enemy and them was talking about. If you listen to their records.
Yeah. And when you look at it, they were, you know, when you look at it, how it plays out today in terms of what is the emasculation of the black man, you know, because we see a lot of things that realistically, I mean, we just got to keep it 100. 25, 30 years ago, niggas weren't going to do that shit that you see a lot of these artists doing now to get on. You know, nobody's going to wear a dress to get...
Only motherfuckers you see wear dresses back then was comedians.
Right.
I'm going to give you a perfect example. 92. All right, if you remember, Robert Townsend had a comedy thing at one time.
Okay,
right?
Yeah.
Robert Townsend had the same type of thing, like, you know, A Living Color and everything. Now, it was only one rapper that did the comedy thing with Robert Townsend, right? And wore a dress. And guess what? Nobody didn't care because it was comedy, and that was Biz Markie. You understand what I'm saying? But that was entertainment. And that was comedic. That was comedy.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Ain't nobody got that Biz Koofy after they saw that shit. Everybody actually was cracking the fuck up about it because Biz is naturally a comic. Biz is a funny dude.
Yes, he was. Yes,
you know what I'm saying?
So
I mean, come on. There's rules to this type of shit. You know what I'm saying? Biz was a natural, funny dude, and Biz loved to see people smile.
Yes, he did.
You know what I mean? So, come on, man.
Yeah.
But what these dudes is doing now, no. They doing this to try to prove a point because they're extra sensitive and shit. Nobody cares about nobody's sensitivity right now. Not in the age, not in the information age. No. Sensitivity is overrated. You know what I'm saying?
And I guess, Dungeon, we could use that as a perfect segue with business. Recent passing, what was Biz's legacy in terms of how much of a gem, a treasure, how loved he truly was to the hip-hop culture,
man,
in terms of what he brought to
it? Let me tell you something. When Biz was beatboxing back in the 80s, I was beatboxing. I it was so many of us that would emulate Biz at the time. You understand what I'm saying? And then Biz was spitting. I mean, come on, Biz made hits. Biz made hits about life from his perspective, and it was funny. You could listen to a Biz record, and you could crack up about it, and you'd be like, wow. You know what I mean? You could listen to it, and you could see the story. You understand what I'm saying? That's what the game is missing now, the point to where you can listen to a record and actually see what the fuck these people is talking about. You understand what I'm saying? Biz left a hell of a imprint in hip hop. Biz is always will be a hip hop icon.
Yes, he is.
You know what I mean? I mean, like, come on, man. And then when he started DJing, I was like, get the fuck out of here. This nigga DJ too. You know what I'm saying? So it was like, you know, and this was years ago, even when Biz was living in Maryland and Laurel. You know what I'm saying? My peoples would take me by there every now and then and shit. You know, I probably should have done like once or twice, but he would be always be DJing and shit, and he'll be talking to people. I mean, he's a good dude. You know what I'm saying? It never built with him per se, but like, shit. I'm like, shit, this is one of the motherfuckers I look up to in this game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And when I heard that he was in hospice, I mean, me personally, I already knew it was a matter of time. But even the fact that me hearing that he was in hospice, it didn't really sit right with me. You understand what I'm saying? Because we just lost X, we just lost Black Rob, we just lost Bismarck. I mean, Prince Marky D. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
I mean, come on, B. And X and fucking Ecstasy from Houdini.
Yeah. I mean, and to lose all those legends in roughly a 6-month span, you know, has just been, and that's important why we do this show, for historical context of what we have talked about, for people like yourself who are living legends of the game, and for those that we haven't interviewed and we have interviewed, you know, who are legends. Who are pine, and not even if they're not, even if they're not legends, just people who have dedicated their life to this culture, whether they be.
Man, everybody's a legend in their own right. They just got to grab it.
That's real.
And act on
That's
it.
Real.
You know what I mean? They just got to grab it, act on it, and don't have their head in their fucking ass because nobody don't give a fuck about their ego shit. You know what I'm saying? And that's what a lot of these dudes be fucking up at because they get this little bit of bread. And then they'll get an ego, and then they want to disrespect the OGs. And like, me personally, put nigga ass in a heartbeat. I don't give a fuck. I'm not beat with the bullshit. I got grandkids, and I need to make sure that they've been risen right. And I'm not going to let no one or anything stop me from doing that. So I'm going to go hard on my music. You know what I'm saying? And then at the end of the day, my personal life, I'm going to go hard. I go hard on that, too. You know what I'm saying? But my personal life is personal. However, a lot of these dudes like to make business personal. You can't make business personal because that's what you're going to fuck up at. You know what I mean? You have to learn to separate the fucking two. It has to be separated. You know what I'm saying? Because when you bring business into your personal, especially if it's illegal shit that you're doing, there's going to be a ripple effect, and you're not going to be the one that's going to pay for that. Your peoples are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that people need to realize, man. They like this is the type of shit that you got to use your fucking head, man. You know what I mean? If you're in this business, do what the fuck you got to do and stand. Leave a legacy for your peoples. Now, if you're doing shit that you're not supposed to be doing, my best bet, do what the fuck you got to do and get about that shit before you go to jail or your ass get popped. Simple as shit. Hustle is a hustle.
Which is another perfect segue, Dungeon, because I wanted to ask you that, you know, this too. We've seen, you come from the block, so you know what goes on in the block. You know, we really want to get down in the dirt about it. You know about it even when the Bloods first came to New York in terms of United Blood Nation, which is not related to the Bloods in California. Let's make that clear. Even though the guy was from California. So you are from that era where you really started seeing, I mean, but even then you had the Decepticons back in the day. You had all this was going on in New York.
When we was doing it, a lot of us was just doing it out of frustration.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? A lot of us was running with that shit out of frustration and shit. A lot was running to them type of shits for guidance and shit because they didn't have that type of proper guidance at home.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then a lot of us was just running through it because we could do that. Like with me, everything I did in the street, ain't nobody made me do none of that shit. I did it because I felt like it. You know what I'm saying? That was my choice. You know what I'm saying? Ain't nobody put a gun in my head and told me to get a package. Ain't nobody did none of that shit. I did that shit because I fucking felt like it. When I shot at motherfuckers, I did it because I felt like it. And at the end of the day, they was fucking with me. You understand what I'm saying? But guess what? At the end of the day, you have to realize these type of things that you go through in order to better yourself. See, I know what I did. You know what I mean? And I'm not going to dispute what the fuck I did. And shit, I got high off every motherfucking thing. I could care less than the fuck what a nigga think. So fucking what? Take that baggage. That's on you, motherfucker. Not on me. But at the end of the day, at least I could live to tell about this shit. Many other motherfuckers that I know is not even fucking here no more.
Right.
And these is good fucking people. They just make fucked up decisions and bad choices. You know what I'm saying? And when you notice and when you learn that along your life that you're going to make bad choices and everything else, everything should fall in play for you. Because guess what? That's called using your fucking brain. See, even though I did a lot of fucked up shit in the streets, I had to come to a realization that that was not my fucking path.
Right.
There's no talent in that shit. My talent is somewhere else. So I cannot serve two masters. So it's either this, where I can constantly walk around, look over my shoulder, or whatever the case may be, or I do this and handle my business the right fucking way, and I don't have to stress none of that shit. I could go see my kids and just smile and watch them grow the fuck up like they, like a parent's supposed to. You know what I mean? It's crazy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, everything is about the choices. Everything is about choices.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Dungeon. And I mean, and what we, and I wanted to get to that other part of it in terms of, because what you, you know, when you looked at, when you look at it from back in the day, from what the music was, I mean, because we know the Wu Street pedigree. We know, we've heard legends of Rakim's pedigree. We don't, but that's how slick Rakim was, because we still don't know what he was really into. You know,
facts. You had
you know,
to, yeah,
we,
yeah, facts.
You know, but a lot of the, you know, Kool G Rap, my favorite MC of all time. We know Kool G was really with the shit in the street. You know,
no, Kool G was a rapper.
I thought Kool G,
Kool G hung with the dudes.
Gotcha.
That wasn't
okay.
Kool G's
okay.
thing. Kool G was the one that was hanging with the dudes. Kool G is a rapper.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that for a fact.
Understood.
I got sources, and then on top of that shit, I witnessed shit myself. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm just gonna say, like my dude Bill Blass. Bill Blass was the one.
I've heard of Bill Blass.
God rest his soul. R.I.P. Bill Blass had Kool G Rap, and Bill Blass also had Rakim during that time.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Blass was one of the biggest dudes in East New York. That was about it. Bill Blass is definitely about that life, but Bill Blass was also taking care of that business. You know what I'm saying? Kool G was about the rap. You know what I'm saying? But Coochie hang around Blast. So that's where you got your Ill Street Blues and your Rack the Riches and shit like that from. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it, if you listen to Coochie rap shit, he mentioned Blast a couple of times in his raps.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And one thing about it, man, with what you have now is that the dudes that really lived the life back in the day, you knew they did. Or they even hinted they did, but some of them they didn't even talk about it. Nowadays, it's like everybody's trying to be a gangbanger. Everybody's trying to be the hardest out. And
got
to
compensate.
Like, yeah. And,
when your
you
music
know,
ain't good, you got to use other antics to compensate.
Well, that's when motherfuckers, that's when their egos come in and they got their heads in their asses.
You know, because we've seen
all you
a situation
have to do is just,
yeah.
You know, you do is just have to just handle your B.I., you know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, but a lot of times, they've got to understand, you know, when you put out certain energies, it's going to bring consequences. And some of these dudes out here really don't, you know, get it from a perspective of, you know, like you said earlier, Dungeon, you know, you stick to what you know in terms of who you really are, you know, but when you start playing out,
like,
when you start,
I got stories for days, dude, like, just the only thing, I mean, it's even within life in general, I mean, the whole thing is just stay in your goddamn lane, man, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Everything will come.
What is it King Benny said in Sleepers when he was, you know, talking to dude, he was like, you know, you're in the dirt. He's like, you're in the dirty end of the field, man. The field now, and I like to play alone because King Benny was about that action. You know, when Benny knew it was time for him to get in and get in with the shit. You know, a lot of these dudes don't understand that when you get out into that dirty end, how not only dirty it is, but how you can get buried in it just as fast. You know, and you know, we saw a lot of people, you know, play with some things that they shouldn't have, and they paid the price for it.
It's going to be like that because at the end of the day, curiosity killed the cat and a lot of other motherfuckers. You know what I'm saying? But satisfaction will always bring back the knowledge of shit. You understand what I'm saying? Especially if it's some
right.
positive shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Facts.
That's the most important thing, is letting your ability, letting your gift, letting your natural charisma speak for itself. Because there's no substitute for being the genuine article. But people will cut a cloth of being counterfeit all day, but they can't match the material.
No, because you know why? Because cats rather listen to. I give an example. Cats will listen to mm-hmm. Drake and will rather be more like Drake than themselves. You understand what I'm saying? To where me,
right,
you know why
yeah.
I stay relevant in the game? Because every time I hear something new, I'm going to write something against that shit. That's why I stay relevant. Oh, this little motherfucker spit like that? I can do that too. Simple. That's how I stay relevant.
Keeps you motivated.
Everything new that come out, I hear the shit. All right, it's whack. Let me listen to the album. There may be one joint on that motherfucker that I like, and I'm going to write something towards that. You know what I'm saying? Even with Busta. I love it when Busta come out with new shit. Because then I'll get my pen game on.
look, nigga, did that album, did ELE 2 just like
that? Let me say
something to
you. Busta Last Shit is a classic, B.
Yes, it is.
And it makes so funny. Busta Last album basically shows everybody, motherfucker, I will kick you in your neck. You know who the fuck I am. It is what it is. The rah-rah is still here. Don't let the muscles fool you.
Trevor still got
it. Definitely salute the Busters.
Look, Trevor still got it.
And he will have the wild videos.
But see, this is the crazy thing, though. A lot of dudes that's in my generation in this hip-hop shit, they're going to always be the nicest.
Mm-hmm.
Because they'll sit there, look at this shit, and then they come on, man. Like I was speaking about Will Smith, perfect example. You saw how he got on that joint with Joyner? He was with him.
Yeah.
Blow for blow, ball for ball. You know what I'm saying? Killer B, and he's in his 50s. So, come on, man. There's nothing wrong with the game. It's just how people handle their business and how they present themselves that fuck it up.
Yeah. And one thing about it, one thing about it with Griselda being a little bit older, you know, they're pushing their near their 40s. Will and his, you know, 50s. Even Jay being 50 now, one thing about it though, which is still beautiful, is that, you know, they still not only do music, they do music at a high level, and it shows that this culture of hip hop is not relegated to age. If you mm-hmm. have been there, if you're a pioneer,
hell no.
and you lived it, you're still integral to it. I tell everybody.
Due to knowledge. It's no
said,
age.
Yeah.
It's no age limit on entertainment, period, B.
Exactly.
I'm going to give you a perfect example. The lady that played the elder in Black Panther, the oldest one, she's 83 years old, and that was her first acting gig, B.
Hmm. Oh, that's deep. That's deep.
You know what I'm saying? Now, there's no age limit
crazy.
On anything that you put your mind to. The only person that limitation you was you.
Yeah.
From the time you get up, from the time you go to bed, if anything happens to you negative throughout that day, that's because you allow it. And if you don't know how to handle
that's
it,
bad.
Then you need to talk to somebody about it. But at the end of the day, there's no excuse. There's no excuse why the world is fucked up. It's fucked up because motherfuckers allow it to be fucked up. So now, it got to take people like us to really fucking use our thinking power to fucking get these motherfuckers back on the right track.
Yeah. And part of it means don't be afraid.
Hey, I was going to shoot this to you. I was going to shoot this question to you since we're talking about movies in Hollywood and everything. That we know that they're working on season 2 of the Wu-Tang joint.
That's done. September 8th, that's coming out on Hulu.
Oh, word. Okay. What are your thoughts about it? Like, do you think it portrayed?
I like it. I like the way that it's being portrayed. You know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, it's a form of entertainment, but at the end of the day, it's a form of a truth that has to get out. Now, everything else basically was real or not, that's basically for the crowd to decide. You understand
right.
what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, to every documentary or to every story, there's always going to be a little bit of hype in it for entertainment purposes only anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But besides that, everything's everything. I love the whole format of it. You know what I'm saying? I love it.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see season
yes,
two.
Sir. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
And what's great
and,
about it?
And
is,
you know, we got to.
You know,
go ahead.
Go ahead. I was saying, one thing about
yeah.
it is, it's great to see the Wu, you know, getting those flowers now in terms of people really getting to see the story of how it all began. You know, we're from that era, so we kind of know, we were there when it all started. Even us being in our late 30s and 40s. You know, we still kind of know. We still know where we kind of we're still learning. But to see the younger generation, I'm like, this is essential watching right here because you need to know how one of the most greatest influential rap groups came to existence, and that's a
right.
history lesson that needs to be told.
All day, and it's a lot of history with that too, and that and not only with the Klan, but with like affiliates and family members also. So,
yeah.
I mean, everything is always a stepping stone to shit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then we to the point that right now, like with me, like I put out a single with my nephew last year. And that shit hit the Billboard charts for like a couple of weeks. I'm satisfied with that. I'm getting my platinum.
How did that feel, man? How did that feel?
Honestly, I don't got no feeling towards it because I've been doing it too long. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I get it. It's just like getting an award at school. You understand what I'm saying? And at the end of the day, even though I'm 47, I'm still learning. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So the plaques is basically just an acknowledgement of what I've done accomplished. You know what I'm saying? The mission ain't over yet. The mission is far from over. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, one thing about it, man, is that you understand the mission, and, you know, as long as you are here with us, you will continue to complete the mission, whatever is assigned. You know, you understand the assignment, and you complete the mission, whatever that assignment entails. As we get to closing out in a couple minutes, Dungeon Master, this has been monumental. This has been historical. This has been enlightening. This has been exciting. Dude, we appreciate you so much coming on, man. You know, goes
yo,
without
I
saying,
appreciate
you're welcome
y'all for
back
having
anytime.
Me.
Yes.
Definitely.
It was a great building process.
Yes, it was.
To a D.
So plug, yeah. So before we get out of here, now plug your social media, man. Let everybody know where to find you, man. Tell them what you got coming.
Well, okay, for people that has brain capacities that can actually think, the pronunciation of the name is Dungeon Master. So when you spell it, it's DUNGEONMASTA. And I'm on all social media. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Look out for that new Dirty Klansman album. That's out right now. The Legacies Project is the second installment in the Dirty Klansman saga. And Dirty Klansman is basically a tribute group to Old Dirty. That's my give back. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm.
And also look out for the new single, which is Me and You. We already got that. You know what I mean? You Stupid. That's on social media. Everything is out there. You know what I mean? Just get it. Dungeon Master, Dirty Klansman, Brooklyn Zoo, we here.
Definitely, man.
That's what it is, man.
Definitely. So once again, man, I mean another excellent episode of Off the Cuff Radio. Shout out to our legendary guest, Dungeon Master, man. We're just great at this.
Definitely salute to Angela Covington and the Mixed Mafia family. You know what I mean? That's definitely my peoples, you know what I mean? Definitely salute to them.
Definitely.
So, yeah, man, we're going to keep pushing that line for you, man. Just follow us on the radio page. You're going to keep seeing a lot of your stuff up there. And we just going to keep doing what we do.
hey, I appreciate everything, and trust me, everything new come through, y'all got the first exclusives.
Yeah. All right. On that note, we out of here. See y'all next Friday and next Sunday. Big celebration, 7-year anniversary going down. Call your people.
Yep.
Yeah.
Salute.
Yeah. Hey, yo, we build till the sunshine ends. Every day's mathematics, so subtract 1 from 10. And you'll see that knowledge is born. When you look at